21st day. A little dyslexic slip there. It is the 21st day of March 2011. We're listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ. In a bit of a philosophical mood this morning, just with respect to the rainy conditions outside and, of course, the conditions that we all live in with respect to the New World Order, the forces behind globalization, the Old World Order, the Anglo-American establishment, the empire, and the empire is currently striking back against Libya. And that's right, folks, we've got another war 8 years to the day, 19 March 2003, 8 years to the day on 19 March 2011, Libya was bombed in much the same way Iraq was bombed at the start of that war. So it wasn't just a no-fly zone. They were planning, the Anglo-American establishment, the elite, the international community, Obama, our own grandstanding goofball of a prime minister, Harper, at a summit in Paris recently. The salesman for the central banking mafia behind control of much of the world, at least the frameworks within which we operate in. They decided to start bombing Libya, killing upwards of 100 people at last count that I saw, but certainly an unnecessary first step when it comes to international sanctions against the country, whether they are warranted or not. So you've got to wonder what the heck's going on here. And I got to tell you, as someone who does look at the news here, for my own interests, for the interests of the people around me, and for the interests of course, CKLN Rude Awakening listeners on Mondays and Thursdays to your host BK, aka VJ. You know, I'm trying to figure out how we comprehend this, how we comprehend the beginning of another Middle Eastern war, probably the fourth at my count, with Iraq, Afghanistan, Northern Pakistan, and now Libya. And what the future is starting to look like with respect to our response to what things like this are, and you know what it should be. So what do? I go to Twitter. Twitter is the home for revolutions and the place for information today. And I do notice, having tweeted myself a fair bit recently at twitter.com/MayorVij, MayorVij, where you can find my tweets, that it's hard to explain things on Twitter. It's not hard to share things that we already have some sort of familiarity with, but it is hard to explain things on Twitter, in the sense that I'm trying to make the point that that Gaddafi, you know, wasn't that bad a guy to his people relative to his competition. Let's put it that way. So, since the 1970s, Libya's living standards have improved every year, and they now have the highest HDI, or Human Development Index, a UN measure, in Africa, the people of Libya. So Gaddafi's history as a nationalist and as a pro-African, someone trying to unify the African continent, someone who supported rebel movements against imperialism throughout Africa, it isn't hard for people to understand that, if you can explain it, and if you can also add, but yeah, he's a really bad guy, he's a dictator, and he should probably go, but maybe this isn't the best solution. So how do you factor all that into a tweet, or two, or a tweet, as they're commonly known? And so this is what I'm thinking. I'm racking my brains here. I'm trying to figure out why is it that at this time in history, 11 years deep into the 21st century, we have more access to information than ever, and yet we have less political control than ever. Now there's no reason for that. There was no explanation that I could come up with, you know, except for possibly mind control. And so, because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, back in the day, think of us in 1776. Say we're under British Empire occupation, and we're American revolutionaries. And we're like, all right, so I have an idea. And how do we get that idea to everybody where we live, so that we can all manifest this idea to put up posters, give out flyers, to oppose certain legislation, to, you know, go on strike one day, to not pay tax, to dump tea in a harbor, whatever the hell your idea was. Back in the day, it was about, how do you get that information to more people? Today, it's how do you get more people to care? Or how do you get more people to take an interest in this type of information? It's there, and you can get it to them fairly easily, but how do you get people to take an interest, and why aren't they taking an interest, and what's really at stake, and what do people have to know? Because there's a bunch of decent people out there, courageous people out there, doing, you know, working hard, doing stuff for their families, and the whole nine yards. And you got to figure, if they understood what was going on, then you know, they would take steps to make sure that that their future and the future of their kids and their families and so on is something that is safeguarded. And that would today, in many ways, be by fighting the info war first, and then using that to reject the lies and push for better policies. But look, I'm gonna take you to Gerald Celente, top trends forecaster at TrendsResearch.com, on the Alex Jones Show on the 14th of March, for why you can't just vote and you got to prepare.
I've said this before, and you know that we are forecasting. It's already underway. The first great war of the 21st century has begun. These are all elements. This has nothing to do with democracy, theocracy, autocracy. It has to do with very few people having much too much and way too many people having very, very little, not enough. When the money stops flowing down to the man on the street, the blood starts flowing in the streets. And that's what we're seeing. The only reason we haven't seen it to this level in Europe, which really is where it all began, the revolutions because of the austerity measures, is that the children out there in these other countries, including the good old USA, they still believe in the myth of democracy. So in the North Africa and in the Arab nations in the Middle East, they know what the deal is and they have to overthrow that government. But what they tell you in Europe and the US is, make your change at the ballot box. So they have the people conditioned thinking that they can vote their way into change, like change you can believe in. Small change, no change, exactly. So they believe still that, well, we'll wait till the elections come around and then we'll clean house. Oh yeah, you put the Gambinos in for the Bananos. So we're going to not see it happen here as we see it happen over there. But then the wild card was just dealt, and it's Japan. Japan's GDP to debt is 213 times the GDP, the debt. They're already in problems. You're going to start seeing trade wars, currency wars, as you already mentioned, and they equal hot wars. We are urging people, and I say this every time I'm on your show, be prepared. Deal with this as though if you don't do the best you can to weather it, you're going to go under. Because if it doesn't happen to the worst, at least you're prepared for the worst. You won't lose anything. But if you don't prepare, you're going to lose everything because this thing is collapsing.
And that's right, folks. This thing is collapsing and we are all caught in the middle of it. And the things you see on TV, the crisis a week that we get now with the protests in the Middle East, the Japanese nuclear meltdown, and the war on Libya are the beginning of World War III. And here on C. Kellen's Rude Awakening on Mondays and Thursdays, I do try and get in some of the causative factors behind all this so that we can do something about it. And that includes, unfortunately for some out there who may have issues with it, the problem of mind control. Because it's something that we all recognize and we feel. We may call it, you know, the influence of the media, the effect of the media, the effect of technology. We may call it people seeing a therapist, people who go to see life coaches, people who need parent coaches, people who have trouble communicating and relating, and so on and so forth. And so here on Rude Awakening, I do try at times to tie these different factors in so that when these incredibly crazy things are happening in our culture globally, because it is now a global culture for everyone out there who likes to think global and be global and act global and live global, and we're all one world and one love and all that sort of thing. It's like, all right, well, here we are. This is what happens when you go along with a program that's been laid out for you by people that want to control everything on the planet. The New World Order, the Anglo-American establishment, the central banksters who print fiat money from nothing, loan it to governments around the world, and essentially control the world through their control of money and their networks and armies of think tanks and secret societies and foundations and organizations and institutions that are now very public, like the United Nations and the World Trade Organization and the World Health Organization, and all these, you know, their subgroups and partners and think tanks like the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations in New York, or the Council of Canadian Chief Executives here, both branches of the Royal Institute for International Affairs or Chatham House in London. You can go to chathamhouse.org.co.uk or something to find them. Chatham House, Chatham House. But the point is, this is where it emanates from. This is basically the British Empire reflexing their muscles in aggressive ways worldwide. And as I said previously on shows, this period of globalization will see the international community act against anybody out there who defies them, including individuals in their own countries and groups and other countries as well. And so how do we react to all this? Well, I'm going to take you to a non sequitur, if you don't mind. It's from Thought Catalog at thoughtcatalog.com, courtesy of ByronCrawford.com, a former XXL magazine blogger and a professional, former professional hip-hop blogger who recently got fired or laid off from XXL magazine. And he's a controversial figure, and he's a talented writer, so ByronCrawford.com. I'm passing on this article here from thoughtcatalog.com. Young People Aren't Having Sex in New York, by Ryan O'Connell. The New York Observer has run a very interesting piece about the supposed sexless lives of 20-something New Yorkers. According to writer Nate Freeman, people have sold their sex lives for a large following on Twitter, cocaine, and an iPhone, he writes. And this is a quote: young New Yorkers no longer care about having sex. It's not the end game, nor even the animating force of social interaction. Men and women still get dressed up, but not for the purpose of taking off their clothes in another's company. What used to signify our desire or the desire to be desired now boils down to narcissism. How will I look on Patrick McMullen tomorrow, or just on Facebook? Back to the writer at Thought Catalog. As the 20-something whose career exists in the blogosphere, I'd be lying if I said this article didn't touch a nerve. Since I started writing full-time, I've started my own Twitter and seen a rise in my followers. I get emails from gay babes a few times a week congratulating me on my work and exuding some virtual flirtation, and I have more Facebook friends than I've ever had in my life. On paper, it would seem my social life has been enhanced, not decreased. But what has it all amounted to? Not a lot of sex, I'll tell you that. To a certain extent, I do agree with this notion that young people are too busy effing themselves to actually get around to effing anyone else. With the rise in social media, people feel more connected to each other than ever, but wonder why they're going home alone each night and ordering delivery food. Quote, I have 3,000 people following me on Twitter. Will one of them just F me? Social interactions have become so mechanically constructed that a tender moment spent lying in bed with someone and snuggling is almost jarring. Any moments spent offline are getting to be uncomfortable, which is terrifying. That being said, will my sex life resume its usual course if I sign offline? New York City has always been a place that's full of people who are career first and personal life second. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if people had less sex here than in, say, Iowa. After all, there's nothing to do in Iowa besides have sex, right? And he goes on to say, the major blogger boy problem probably only applies to a small percent of the population, and New Yorkers are probably happily boning by and large. But, this is still an identifiable problem and concern. And that is the most heavily promoted social networking and social interaction tools may actually be making us less social. And may be making social interactions less desirable and more difficult. Or more difficult and less desirable. Depending on which you believe came first, the chicken or the egg. And I gotta say here, on Thought Catalog, I just read this and I found this fascinating. There's another article here from henrymakow.com from the 14th of January 2011. Is Porn Killing Sex in Japan, by Dr. Henry Mako, PhD, a fine scholar out of Winnipeg. Go to henrymakow.com for more of his work and the work of his contributors. He's a Canadian, and he's proud of it, and he's also someone who's not afraid to talk seriously about gender relations and at least put the other perspective out there to give us some balance in the media sphere within which we operate. It says here, normally teenage boys are obsessed with sex. You know something is very wrong when more than a third of Japanese youth say they don't want it. According to a government survey, 35% of Japanese males aged 16 to 19 are averse to sex, more than double the 17.5% of men in the previous study in 2008. So there you go, in just 2 years, the number of young Japanese men or Japanese boys who were interested in sex declined. It doubled in its decline from 17.5% to 35% in just 2 years. Dr. Dr. Macko, the Illuminati are in favor of reducing population. What is happening in Japan may be a harbinger for Europe and America. Why is this happening? Counterintuitive as it seems, pornography may be killing sex in Japan. According to Wikipedia, quote, Japanese pornographic culture is more widely accepted as part of mainstream media in comparison to the West. Thus, in many cases, scenes acceptable to Japanese audiences are unacceptable in other countries. Ribaldry is quite common even in child-oriented materials, and expressions that in most cultures would not be acceptable for the general audience are shown without a warning. Pornography is a sexual turnoff. This is why the Illuminati have made it ubiquitous. People get sick of whatever they have too much of. There's too much sex out there. The challenge and mystery are gone. Most males are jaded. They look at porn to see if there's any women left who can turn them on. Porn makes available women seem inadequate. It becomes a substitute for sex with real women. Many young women model themselves after porn stars. Performing in porn is not very different than their normal lives. Some males have lost respect for females in general as a result of millions of beautiful young women displaying themselves, or worse, for money. When you lose respect, interest wanes. Male heterosexuality involves an element of, quote, taking possession, unquote, of a woman, his wife, making her a part of him. Males lose interest in women they feel belong to many other men, and these women lose interest in belonging to any one man. And I gotta say that there as a dude, with my girlfriends, there were things I would not like them, or in some cases, allow them to wear. And when I mean allow, I mean, look, I don't believe in any sort of domineering, old school, patriarchy, from any sort of backward concepts. But I do believe in saying, honey, you can't show that to everybody. I mean, and girls will say, wow, these yoga pants make my ass look great. And you could say, oh, really? Can I see? But you don't have to. It's there for you anyway. And this is the thing, and this is the culture that's being designed to actually turn us off. And so, there's tons of great big New World Order issues out there. I'm going to go back to a couple in a sec here. But the reason for the diversion into the social networking and into the porn, and you can find more information on both these topics at my website, whatyouwantabelievein.com. So you got the Twitterverse and relationship sections, where you can see more articles on the effects of social networking on our health, including turning us into children who react to flashing lights and to all sorts of quick movements that don't necessarily improve our attention span or desire to pay attention to anything else. The reason I divert into these and into porn is to just make the case that the ubiquity of the things that we use to entertain us instead of paying attention to some of the more important things are in fact part of a program designed to make us like each other less, and that's a problem. But this is Nick Begich, Dr. Nick Begich, on the history of HARP with respect to what's going on and mind control.
Could I get your thoughts on where we've come with the use of this technology? Technology is a weapon. From, let's say, 1995, when your book with your co-author, Angels Don't Play This Harp, was published.
Right. Yeah, consistently, the things we said then, we stand by today. We haven't varied our position on anything that we published as far back as our original articles. And Gene Manning and I, when we wrote Angels Don't Play This Harp, we had a lot of denials, from the military side. But over time, and people can review the record, they'll see that many of the things that we asserted have been affirmed and confirmed both by other independent researchers as well as the military themselves. Looking back on sort of the direction in which it's gone, it's certainly a lot more of an international issue than it was in 2002. The Russian Duma actually passed resolutions opposing HARP for all of the reasons that we raised. The persons that brought that forward, one of them was in attendance in a lecture that I had given in Brussels to a group called GLOBE, which was 200 legislators from 44 governments that heard my presentation on HARP. He took it back to his own scientists in Russia, who evaluated our work against the research base that the Russians had developed, and essentially affirmed it and confirmed it and then objected. European Parliament in 1999 passed their resolutions opposing a HAARP, again, as a result of our testimony before them, and dealt with the non-lethal weapons issues that we had also identified.
And we're back, folks. That was Dr. Nick Begich on HAARP technology. Sorry, the clip was a little quieter than I thought it would be there. That was from the Black Fridays radio show. That was episode 29. And I got to tell you, if you don't know what HAARP is, HAARP technology is basically the High Auroral Research Program out of Alaska. They've got these antennas worldwide that can affect the Earth's electromagnetic field, which can, in many cases, according to Dr. Nick Begich and others, affect our mood, affect our happiness, and in other cases, it can also affect the Earth itself and the Earth's magnetic field itself. And there's speculation that HAARP may have been behind the earthquakes near Japan that caused the tsunami that caused the nuclear meltdowns currently going on over there. And so HAARP technology is important to look into. Jesse Ventura has made a very accessible TV show. His first TV show, Jesse Ventura's Conspiracy Theory, was about HAARP technology. And so they went up to Alaska, and people have been interviewed, and people who work for HAARP have been interviewed. And you may have heard Dr. Begich say in that clip that since he wrote his book back in 1995, the European Parliament and the Russian Parliaments have both condemned the use of HAARP technology, which is fairly strong for them to do. If it didn't exist, they probably wouldn't bother. But if it existed and critics out there got information out, then there's no doubt that that is what, you know, that those decisions were deliberated at length by members of the Parliament before taking that strong a statement against them. And so I'm going to take you to an article here by Dr. Nick Begich and Gene Manning here. It says here, unlike the protests of the 1960s, the objections to HAARP have been registered using the tools of the 90s. From the internet, fax machines, syndicated talk radio, and a number of alternative print mediums, the word is getting out and people are waking up to this new intrusion by an overzealous United States government. The research team put together the materials which eventually found their way into the book. Never held a formal meeting, never formed a formal organization. Every person acted like a node on a planetary info-spirit net, with one goal held by all, to keep this controversial new science in the public eye. The result of the team's effort was a book which describes the science and the political ramifications of this technology. That book, Angels Don't Play This HAARP, capital H-A-A-R-P, Advances in Tesla Technology, has 230 pages. This article will only give the highlights, despite the amount of research, 350 footnoted sources. At its heart, it is a story about ordinary people who took an extraordinary challenge in bringing their research forward. And so this is a bit about the book on HAARP and about the efforts behind HAARP and a bit about the info war being fought at the time in the 1990s with fax machines and the internets and talk radio. Very, very similar to what we have today, and yet we have even more with Twitter and with Facebook. But you know, let's take a look at that again for a sec. You know, as we go from the macro, the causative forces behind wars, earthquakes, and the micro, the causative forces behind our isolation, our feelings of isolation, or our disempowerment as cultures worldwide, as we are herded into accepting this new world order. Let's just take Facebook for example. If Facebook, or if I saw Facebook, and I'm sure it does happen, you know, here and there, and one can cite examples to defend Facebook and be happy and leave it at that. But instead of doing that, bear with me for a second, and let me explain something that that may be of some interest. If Facebook and Twitter and all these other interactions with respect to activists out there in particular, although everyone should be somewhat of one at this time, if they have any sort of, you know, conscience and conscience, if they can understand, you know, some of what's going on here. If those interactions led to more FaceTime meetings because they were easier to set up, because people could schedule and coordinate things better, and they could contact each other faster, and if they happened more frequently, on a more consistent basis, and if they led to more actions, more productivity as a result of those meetings. You go from you know, a couple of twits here and there. We got to get together and do something about this damn Libya war thing. That's good enough. Then you get together and then you talk about it and you say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to hit the streets. We're going to break down the fact that this is a great time to talk about the years of articles on the fact that Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi was in fact a dictator and a wacko, you know, by from what we can tell from bits and pieces of news footage about him and the odd story. But he's also been trying to improve the conditions for his people in Libya since the 70s and has done a great job, you know, supporting other African nations in their times of trouble, and is known, you notice Africans aren't bombing him, and he's known in Africa as a reasonable, you know, guy to work with. And yet he does run an authoritarian, dictatorial regime. But I've argued, and I argued this when I was in Cuba, that if I had to deal with, you know, the influence, the pervasive and persistent and powerful influence of the Anglo-American establishment and the colonial powers in a post-colonial world where they still mucked around with foundations, NGOs, think tanks, secret societies, intelligence agencies, and armies, and mercs, and training schools, and a whole mindset. They gave their own cultures to not really, you know, look into this or look for patterns with respect to this sort of behavior done overseas. Then I might run a dictatorship too. I might be Fidel Castro in Cuba and say, nope, screw it. We're not letting the Yankees get in here and mess around. And I'm not saying Castro's good or bad. There's questions around him too. But the point is that, you know, I can see why Gaddafi, why Saddam, why other people would go, nope, we got to keep this place on lockdown. Because if I go, you don't know who the hell they're going to put in and to do what to this place. And I may, you know, and Gaddafi shunned a lot of the trappings of the other monarchs in the Middle East. He didn't get big shiny cars and big shiny yachts and big shiny palaces. You know, he was a bit different. So, back to the point here. About the Facebook and the social networking leading to more, you know, broader conversations that lead to more action. In some cases, you know, habitually, you know, repetition, you know, propagandists know repetition is the key, and they can repeat things and shoot news out there faster these days than ever. So we got to be careful about playing along with what's heavily promoted to start revolutions. And Mike Adams on the Alex Jones Show from the 16th of March is going to break down a little bit more of the truth versus science.
When there's a meltdown, when there's fissionable material being released into the atmosphere, they can't cover this up. They can cover up vaccines for a while. They can cover up GMOs for a while, fluoride in the water for decades, but not this. And so this is a turning point, not just for the future of nuclear power, but also for people who have been, let's say, listening to you for year after year and wondering, is Alex really right? Is he overstating it, or is he on target? Well, this morning we posted on Facebook, on our own Facebook page, that we're going to be on your show here. And the first comment from a person was, Alex Jones was right. You know, and I know you're not ego-driven. It doesn't matter to you to hear that. But for those listening, it's an important point that when we've been warning, you and I both have been warning for a long time, and you for many more years than I, about preparedness, about the dangers in the world, about the cover-ups, about governments not telling people the truth.
Because when we let them get away with cover-ups, they get more and more arrogant, more and more crazy themselves. There's no governor. You're saying this is a major game-changer. Sorry.
It is a game-changer. Because now, if the lies about the safety of nuclear power can be so devastating and so catastrophic to the people of Japan and perhaps even to the people of North America, it raises the question, you know, what else have we been lied about? What else has been done in the name of so-called scientific thinking? For example, GMOs are now being pushed under science, and anyone who questions them is called unscientific. You know, what else?
When the science actually shows they're deadly.
Well, it does, but they're trying to hide behind that label, right? And nuclear power was given to us as a progression of civilization. This was supposed to be clean energy, virtually limitless energy.
Folks think it's trendy to just mindlessly support it.
Well, exactly. And there are a lot of things like that are happening in our world today. You've talked about here, fluoride in the water, for example. The pharmaceutical medication.
Genetic engineering.
Absolutely. The list just goes on and on.
The Hadron Superconducting Supercollider. A lot of physicists are on record saying it could destroy the planet. These are guys with PhDs, and then the people at Hadron say, well, that's a low probability. They're going to do thousands of tests.
Well, exactly. And what you get to behind all this is the arrogance of the science, of the scientists, combined with the corruption of the politicians, and as you call them, the global elite.
They're believing their own lies.
They do believe them, and they're willing to risk the lives of the public in order to pursue their own agenda. When they built these power plants, remember those GE engineers who quit because they said this isn't a safe design. It's not safe. No one listened to them. That was back in the 70s. And now, decades later, we're starting to look at a time when we're going to have to pay a price.
And an engineer lost their job. They got blackballed when they quit. They didn't just do this, just like the genetic engineer guys that were making $1 million a year, and they come out and say, this potato sterilizes you. We can't put this on the market. They're like, you're fired.
Well, that's right. Time and time again, those who raise the warnings are either ridiculed by the mainstream media, if they're folks like you.
Well, we said this was a meltdown Friday.
Yeah, you were ahead of this, way ahead of us doing it. In fact, I was looking at your news and saying, wow, you guys have an incredible news system going on here, by the way. Paul Watson just does incredible work. But you were on top of this story before the mainstream media was really on board with it, and they're still not on board with the truth of what's happening.
Clip with Mike Adams on the Alex Jones Show. How valuable it is to stay on top of these things and to make sure we're not fooled by the media and we're not fooled into reducing the amount that we talk about things to the point where we're unable to explain lies and what lies are. And We've got to think defensively here. What would you do if you were being attacked at every level, and you knew everybody else out there was as well? If you knew that our food was poisoned, our air was poisoned, our water was poisoned, that half of us are likely to get cancer, that our technology, our radiation in our environment, Wi-Fi, wireless, cell phones, you know, HARP technology. You know, all these crazy things out there designed to enslave us. How would you feel and what would you do? Well, you certainly can take pictures of something you see. And you can point out to somebody something that's going wrong, something that's a little strange, something that's a little funny, something that's a little amusing out there. You know? If you want to explain secret societies, take a picture of the three Masonic statues at the police station at Bain College, just west of Youngin College. And say, or show it to them on YouTube. And say, there you go, how'd you explain that? But more specifically, there is a process going on here by which we're all getting herded into accepting antisocial, selfish, suicidally narcissistic cultures. And the 2012 world's gonna end stuff is out there. And it'll grab people quick because they'll see the stuff going on in the news, and they'll look at their own lives, and they'll feel the overwhelming weight of subtle oppression on multiple levels, and they'll go, screw it. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm just going to think of me. We're probably all going to die anyway. And so I'm going to act like a total whatever. And since the New World Order and our secular cultures, the Novus Ordo Seclorum, written on the back of the U.S. $1 bill underneath Ordo Ab Caio and the Illuminati Pyramid on the back of the U.S. $1 bill, Novus Ordo Seclorum means New Secular Order. Since the New Secular Order killed God, we most of us in our suicidally narcissistic haze won't necessarily feel guilty or a sense that in the afterlife we might be screwed. And under Obama in particular, the left has been turned into the right under Bush. Cheerleaders for war. It's under the guise of humanitarian intervention. And this is why we've got to figure this out and wake people up and break people out of this matrix. If the only thing they want to know is a sentence or two on these issues, and that becomes something that's all we settle on, we won't be able to challenge the propaganda because we won't be able to talk about it. And then even if we do talk about it, we'll just get depressed because we won't feel empowered enough to do anything about it because we don't communicate with other people in more substantive ways that would make taking political action to defend your country something natural and normal and preferable to not when it's required. So I'll give you an example here. I'm at thestar.com, Toronto Star, Canada's largest newspaper. I'm on the left of the left-right spectrum, a spectrum that I will argue, based on evidence, that is politically controlled, since there's one bird brain that controls both wings, and political parties generally push an agenda with minor differences, when they're in power. So it says here at thestar.com, Libya bombing called a success by U.S. officials, by Mitch Potter. It says here, dismiss Libyan state TV reports that at least 64 people were killed in the initial wave of strikes and 150 more wounded. There you go. He just says, ignore it. Yeah, we hit them with a bunch of bombs. And they say, 60 people got killed and 150 got injured. But ignore it. That's the cover. That's the byline for the cover of thestar.com, the first story, the main page story. And then the article actually starts differently. Mitch Potter's article doesn't start like that. But that's the way it seems like on the main page here. And so you can see, if that's all somebody reads, then they have no other interest in this topic, then that might stick with them. And then they may want to prefer that belief system. And people want to think they're doing the right thing. If you're going to train and then you're going to run, a 10-kilometer, whatever, 26-mile marathon, full marathon, to screen for more cancer, to raise money to detect it earlier, then you want to think you're doing the right thing, because earlier we detect it, then a better chance we have of stopping it, preventing it, whatever. But if they're able to have the conversation that involves more aspects of promoting prevention of cancer, and an understanding of some relatively benign cancers where your cells just go out of control for a second and then your body fights it off, and so you don't necessarily need to take cancer drugs every time the slightest bit is detected, just when, there's something going on there. At least that's a theory. If they can discuss these theories and evaluate them, then the push-pull effect will neutralize some of the influence of big governments and big corporations, if we can talk about it and get the word out there. So that is the key. And that's why I bring up the topics of mind control and how I see it being leveraged through technology all around us. Give an example here. This is from today's Globe and Mail here. It says here, The History of Twitter, 140 characters at a time by Andre Picard from today, Monday's Globe and Mail, although it was published yesterday. Twitter is the brainchild of programmers. That's literally how this article starts here, under history. And these articles are little twit length things. Twitter is the brainchild of programmers, not a programmer or programmers, anyway, who worked at the podcasting company Odeo Inc. in San Francisco. And it says here, they were looking for a way, the founders are Jack Dorsey, or at Jack, Evan Williams, at Ev, and Biz Stone, or at Biz. They were looking for a way to send text on their cell phones and a way to reinvent a dying company. On March 21st, 2006, at Jack sent the first tweet, quote, just setting up my Twitter. And thus a communications revolution was born, one renowned for brevity and bad spelling. And again, it's all a joke. It's all a joke. And they do make it seem like it's a joke. You know, they do make it seem like it's no big deal that we're practicing bad grammar and bad spelling, and it's starting to make its way into news stories, and it's starting to make its way into our conversation. And it's not a question of being not getting your knuckles wrapped by the nun. It's a question of being able to communicate about complex issues with people and having the stomach for it so we can do something about it. So recognizing that, we go back to the article from the Globe and Mail here. Dom Segola, or at Dom, in tweet 38, typed these prescient words. Oh, this is going to be addictive. 38 tweets in, they knew this. And I find it addictive. I'll tweet for an hour. I'll tweet like 70 or 100 tweets. And I'll have a stream of consciousness, blurbing about things, sharing articles, philosophical thoughts. It's fascinating. It's just that it is mind control. And I tweet about how it's mind control on Twitter. And I do try and use it for something besides just updates. Because when I see a lot of tweets, we've gone from struggling to write, elegant 140-character haikus, which I still try and do, to something much more different, where there's like 8 words and then a link. So, back to this article on Twitter here. The name Twitter was inspired by Flickr, a photo sharing service. Other names were considered Friendstalker and Dodgeball. The dictionary definition of Twitter is, quote, a short burst of inconsequential information. And the media is promoting this for as a revolutionary tool. You understand that? Do we understand? We understand what's going on here. And so, I'm telling you, if we understand what's going on here, that most of us feel a general sense of unease, and we are being slowly conditioned by our media to revolt in specific ways, to protest, to yell. Half of us will yell, we're really mad. And the other half will go, we already know. We're really mad. We already know. And we'll yell at a bunch of, cops who don't care about people, who aren't there, and politicians and businessmen as they just sort of sit off somewhere in some meeting and laugh at us. And that's not going to cut it. We got to expose some lies, and we got to have explanations that are bigger than a tweet that we share on a regular basis to deconstruct the bombardment of our culture by media, the media assault on our senses that's changing the way we think and changing what we accept. And, you know, you pass by, you know, a few hundred, you know, Gears of War or Man of War or War is Really Cool, you know, posters at video game stores and malls and so on. And eventually what happens? They bomb Libya and you don't care, you know? So this is part and parcel of that. Finishing this article off here on Twitter, at least from my perspective, almost 200 million users worldwide, about 460,000 new Twitter accounts are opened daily, more than 140 million tweets are sent daily, that's 1 billion weekly. In 2008, Twitter had 8 employees, today it has more than 400, and they're hiring at twitter.com/jobs. Why 140 characters? At the heart of Twitter are small bursts of information called tweets. Each tweet is 140 characters in length maximum. Initially, there was no limit to message length. When it went public, the 140 character limit was adopted. Why? Because 160 characters was the SMS limit, and the founders wanted to leave room for a username. Struggling with brevity, you can purchase 140 characters, a style guide for the short form by @dom. And on and on and on, and it's now said to be worth more than $4.5 billion. The value comes from its potential to exploit its base of hundreds of millions of users. How Twitter has changed politics. Social media and microblogging on Twitter has changed the political communication profoundly. Political messages used to be controlled by a handful of powerful gatekeepers. Now the messengers and hence the messages are more diffuse and diverse. In Canada, industry minister is one of the most prolific and popular Twitterers. And on and on and on. Lady Gaga, Justin Bieber, Britney Spears, Barack Obama, and Kim Kardashian are the top twits. The top twit stars, the Twitterazzi, follow them the most. Gaga with nearly 9 million followers, Kim Kardashian with nearly 7 million, and the other fine folks in between. And so there you have it, folks. I got to tell you, this is promotion of this to most people who are feeling a little disconcerted by what's going on now. So let's get out there. Let's get active in the info war. And to do a bit more. My website's whatyouwantabelievein.com. Still figuring out how to run for MP. The more I cheat towards the mainstream, the less I think I can get done with respect to the New World Order problem. And the more I talk about the New World Order problem, the less accessible it is to more people. So hopefully a few people will get in the mood to get out there and get the most important information we need to know out now, any way you can, wherever you are, however you can, through flyers, posters, DVDs, through websites, through blogs, through twits, through whatever. But we've got to start thinking more tactically about how to communicate about these issues as things hit the fan. So before Mr. David James takes you on a four-hour jazz experience you will not forget, I'm going to share a couple of websites for you, and those include Infowars.com, where you'll find more on Libya, including the casual setup for World War III, as they plan on replacing secular leaders in the Middle East with radical leaders who are allied with Al-Qaeda, supposedly, and then they, you know, blow some stuff up here and blame it on them, because hey, they're radicals in charge over there now, right? As opposed to the secular guys like Mubarak and Gaddafi and so on. So you can get a bit more on that, a bit more on the Libyan situation, as well as situation in Japan. World War III, one nation at a time, is what Tony Cartolucci's article on what's going on in the Middle East is called. And Russia, China, and India came out recently against the bombings in the Middle East. So you know you can see the axis is forming. It's them against us, unless all of us wake up and stop at Infowars.com. Great place to figure out more on that. Naturalnews.com, amazing health information. Fluoridealert.org, let's get the fluoride out of our water supply. Harkat statement, H-A-R-K-A-T statement.com for Sophie Harkat and her husband's Muhammad Harkat's case. Sign Harkat statement. I interviewed him on Thursday. Download the interview at radioforall.net and support Sophie Harkat and Muhammad Harkat after 8 years of persecution by corrupt elements within our law enforcement agencies. You can go to vran.org for legal vaccine exemption forms. Seedsofdeception.com for GMO food information. HenryMacko.com. CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, other great websites to check out. Also locally, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, PressForTruth.ca, new screening of Into the Fire at the Bloor Cinema on April 22nd. Check PressForTruth.ca or ConspiracyCulture.com, book and DVD store for tickets. Victor Fletcher's Toronto Street newspaper out there, sold by the homeless, a great buy after 12 years in the game, talking about this smack. Over 50 years, people have been warning us about this, folks. Let's get hip to it, and let's start putting the information out there, and let's start having some confidence in the way we approach these issues. NAUResistance.org, TorontoG20Exposed.com. Tons and tons and tons of people out there doing great work. Let's just make sure we pass it on so more Canadians know it, so more Canadians get an idea of what's going on, and so more Canadians are given the opportunity to defend their country at this time in history. It has been the 21st day of March, 2011. This has been your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ. My website is whatyouwantabelievein.com because I believe you want to believe in yourselves and in the people around you when it comes to dealing with our most pressing issues. First of all, understanding them. Second of all, taking action. And hopefully that's something that we consider. I'm out of here, folks. Have a fantastic day and peace out. Myself that you do.